the continuation of the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus again spoke to the crowds in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. He dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast, but they refused to come. A second time he sent other servants, saying, 'Tell those invited, behold, I have prepared my banquet. My calves and my fattened calf are killed. Everything is ready. Come to the feast.' Some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business. The rest laid hold of the servants, mistreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged and sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then he said to the servants, 'The feast is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. Therefore, go out into the main roads and invite to the feast whomever you find.' The servants went out into the streets and gathered all they found, bad and good alike, and the hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to meet the guests, he saw a man there not dressed in a wedding garment. He said to him, 'My friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?' He was reduced to silence. Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind his hands and his feet and cast him into the darkness outside, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Many are invited, but few are chosen.'" Thus were the words of today's Holy Gospel. Today Jesus speaks to us about the kingdom of heaven, the invitation he has given us to join him there forever, and about how we need to respond to that most important invitation we'll ever receive. He does so within the context of a parable about salvation history, which he illustrates for us basically how not to respond. He concludes the parable by saying, "Many are invited, but few are chosen." Insofar as every one of us here this morning wants to be numbered among the chosen few, and God chooses not by a primordial coin flip, as some Calvinists believe, but by our response to his invitation, it behooves us to pay very close attention to what the Lord tells us today, so that we can respond wholeheartedly to his invitation, choose him who has already chosen us, and help the many we know, love and meet, also learn how to be number two among those who will be chosen at Christ's eternal right. Jesus compares the kingdom of heaven to a wedding banquet a king throws for his son. There are two essential parts we need to ponder. The first is the invitation. Jesus says that the king sent his servants to call those who had been invited to the wedding banquet, but they wouldn't come. When they didn't respond the first time, he gave them a second chance, sending other servants with the words, "Tell those who have been invited, behold, I've prepared my banquet. My calves and my fattened calf have been slaughtered." You can hear, in ancient terms, what we'd be saying today: we've got loads of caviar, the greatest filet mignon, lobster, all the greatest French and Italian desserts anyone could make. Come to the feast. It's ready. But they still didn't come. They made light of it. The servants that Jesus had been describing up until now are the prophets who had been sent by God to invite the Jews to the feast. But the prophets were in large part ignored, mistreated, and killed by the people receiving this invitation to communion with God. We should note that all of the Jews were invited, but only some responded to the invitation. Notably, the prophets, the Blessed Virgin, St. Joseph, St. John the Baptist, the Apostles, and those who became Jesus' disciples. St. Matthew's version, Jesus tells us that one went to his farm, another to his business, and yet another declined the invitation, sending the reply in the messenger's own shed blood. They all alike began to make excuses, St. Luke tells us. First said, I bought a piece of land and I must go out and see it. Please excuse me. Another, I bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm going to go try them out. Please accept my regrets. Another said, I've just been married and therefore I cannot come. Consider me excused. Notice, one used his home as an excuse, another his job, and a third his family. None refused the invitation, saying they wanted to go out and engage in a life of crime. They refused the invitation because they wanted to do good things. Work is good. Loving our family is good. Taking our spouses seriously, great. But when they become the absolute, then they become a relative evil. God has to be first. And that's what we learn in this invitation. Because when we don't put God first, someone or something else in our life is a small g God. And it leads us slowly but surely to extirpating the one true God in our hearts. When it came down to a choice between the wedding banquet and all these other good tasks, the wedding banquet lost. The king lost. God lost. And some sought to make that refusal permanent. This must lead us each to examine our own priorities and whether we sacrifice things for God or we sacrifice God for other things or persons. This is one of the reasons why throughout the history of the church, the saints have applied this parable to the Mass. Not just because the Mass is the foremost locus of the kingdom on earth, but because it's a banquet with the choicest food of all. Indeed, a foretaste of the heavenly banquet. Our attitude toward God, toward heaven, toward God's kingdom, is often shown by how we respond to the invitation Jesus makes to us at the Mass. On Holy Thursday, Jesus said, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Jesus always eagerly desires to share Mass with us each Sunday. In fact, every day, he says, the feast is ready. Come to the feast. More than St. Agnes and the greatest saints hungered to receive the Lord in Holy Communion, the Lord Jesus desires to feed you and me. He wants us present at Mass more than the most loving mother wants all her kids present at Thanksgiving. But often we hear the same excuses for missing Mass as are found in the parable Jesus uses. People prioritize work over God, fixing up the house over God, family over God, sleep over God, or even Sunday cartoons and NFL preview programs over God. And such a refusal can often lead to death. In most cases, not of the herald, but of the invitee, who commits spiritual suicide by cutting himself or herself voluntarily off from God. How much would we sacrifice to get to Mass? In my service of the Holy See at the United Nations, we welcome Christians from all over the world, many from areas where the Christians are persecuted, just for going to Mass. This morning, as I was booking like crazy, as if I was a 25-year-old again, through the Bronx and then through Grand Central Station, as everybody's laughing at the priest and the cassock saying, he must be late for Mass. It reminded me of the time when I was a layman. When you're a priest, it's easy. You're, in a sense, always on time for Mass. It's your hands. But when I was a layman, taking a 12-foot Boston Whaler across 4-foot seas from Cape Cod to Martha's Vineyard because there were no Saturday morning Masses on Cape Cod, or driving 100 miles an hour down Route 81 to Wilkes-Barre because there were no other Masses on a Saturday morning in that part of Pennsylvania. How hard do we work for Mass? How seriously do we respond to the invitation? If something else comes on up, do we say, I'm going to put that off because this is the most important thing in my life? Or do we succumb to the diabolical temptation to use as an excuse to put something or someone before the Lord? How does Jesus respond to the refusal of his creatures? Notice in today's word, he doesn't call off the feast. He expanded the guest list. He kept inviting. The king said to his servants, "The wedding is ready, but those invited weren't worthy. Go, therefore, into the streets and invite everyone you find to the wedding banquet." Servants went into the streets and invited the good and the bad, everyone they found. And the parable says, so the wedding hall was filled. This is the mission of the church. Beginning from the apostles down to our own age, we're sent out into the streets. We're sent out into the internet. We're sent by telephone and by car and by subway to invite everyone, both good and bad. The author James Joyce once described the Catholic Church with the famous expression, "Here comes everybody." And we want everybody. 100 out of 100. Because the Good Shepherd would leave the 99 behind and go out after the lost one. And if we're truly his disciples, we'll imitate that passion. If we don't want everyone, we don't love everyone. Jesus' words point out that the church is not only for the good and the holy, for those of a particular economic class, for those of a special race or background, but for everyone. We shouldn't be surprised, therefore, that in the church we find both great saints and great sinners, and that we find the faithful and the hypocrites. The very word church comes from the Greek word ekklesia, which means those having been called, those having been invited, those who have responded at least minimally to Jesus' invitation. God indeed invites everyone, but that each of us needs to prioritize God not only over evil, but over the other good and important things in life. Without that prioritization, we won't enter God's kingdom because we'll be too damned busy constructing our own. That brings us to the second point, which is about how we're supposed to arrive when we respond to the invitation. This is really important for us to get clearly because God is asking this of us in a particular way in the midst of the present controversies in the church and in society. In the midst of the present scandals, yes, God calls even the scandalous into his church. But then he wants something to happen. In the parable, Jesus says, when the king came in to meet the guests, he noticed a man who was not dressed in a wedding garment. And he said, "Friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment?" And the man was speechless. Then he said to his attendants, "Bind him hand and feet and cast him into the darkness outside where there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth." And I don't think I have to interpret for you what that place symbolizes. First glance, this parable makes the king seem both capricious and cruel. He commands his servants to invite everyone, but then he's picky about their clothes. So picky that in a draconian way, someone who was probably poor, maybe even from the streets, who didn't have any good clothes, would be punished. No wonder why, we could say, people would want to turn down his invitation. But it's essential for us to understand how banquets worked in the ancient world. When kings or leaders invited everyone to a party, they would send out the royal tailors to make proper clothing for everyone who was invited so that everyone could arrive properly vested. It would be like a Manhattan billionaire today inviting homeless people to a black tie dinner. He would know they don't have tuxes, but he would give them free hotel rooms to shower and provide free tuxedos, shoes, the women gowns and jewelry to wear. Clothing. Indeed, the finest clothing was provided along with the invitation. With this history, it's not difficult to recognize why the king would have been so upset upon seeing this improperly attired man. This man would deliberately have refused to wear the clothing that was required and that the king had made available. This man refused to take off his old rags and put on the new vestments. This man showed up, but he refused to change. What's the lesson? It's not simply enough to be on the guest list. It's not enough just to show up. Jesus wants us to appear properly vested for his kingdom and the banquet. He'll provide all we need to show up fittingly attired. We need to cooperate with that dress code. Like in the parable of the prodigal son, we need to take off our swine dung soiled rags and allow him to vest us with the finest garment. Jesus sends out his royal tailors to vest us on the day we became his children, the day of our baptism, when we were clothed in a white garment, told to see in that white garment the outward sign of our Christian dignity. And we were instructed to take that dignity unstained into the eternal life of heaven. This garment is meant to grow as we grow, but it's meant to be kept dazzling white because the banquet of the kingdom is ongoing. No matter whether it's winter or summer, no matter whether it's raining or sunny, we're always supposed to be dressed in our baptismal garments, dressed as the new man and woman, having put off our old selves, clothed ourselves in the new Adam, Christ himself, in his virtues, holiness, manner, teaching, indeed his risen life. In the book of Revelation, there's an image of those who get to the banquet of the kingdom of heaven and how they're clothed. It's an image of the saints, a great multitude that no one could count from every nation, race, people, and tongue. They stood before the throne and before the Lamb, wearing white robes. And St. John is told, these are the ones who have survived the time of great distress. They have washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb. The way God cleanses our garments and makes them white is through Jesus' blood, which is paradoxically the most powerful bleach ever known. We need to humble ourselves to let him do it. He wants to wash us completely like he washed St. Peter during the Last Supper. But we've got to be humble enough to let him do it. He does it first in the sacrament of baptism. And then he does it in the continued sacramental washing machine we call the confessional, where Jesus bathes us inwardly in the cleansing detergent that can wipe out even the darkest stains of sin. That's what we need to do to clean the garment of our soul so that we are always ready for the feast. So while everyone is earnestly and eagerly invited, we can't just come as we are and think that that's all that's needed. We need to be willing to change, which spiritually means we have to be willing constantly to convert. There are some in the church today who stress that all are welcome, but don't even mention the way Christ wants to show up and the means he provides for us to show up well. They don't utter a peep about the change God, out of love, wants for us, but instead behave as if God doesn't care if they come and leave with all their filthy sinfulness. Some today, in some places, Catholics are saying that no matter what the state of their soul, no matter how much they're cheating on the commandments that God has inscribed on their hearts, they can come and receive him who is holy, holy, holy. And some are even chaplains to Stephen Colbert. It's one of the most diabolical lies today. There are even some priests and bishops who dare to celebrate Holy Mass while living double lives of sordid sinning. How sad it would be for Catholics to come to the banquet of the Mass even every Sunday, but come improperly dressed, come uncleansed and unadored in Christ's sacramental grace, so that at the end of life they risk being cast out into the darkness. How much worse it is for a priest to come in that state, where his eternal reward will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. The type of interior metamorphosis that Christ wants to give us so that we might enter into his kingdom and enjoy his banquet is what St. Paul describes in today's epistle to the church in Ephesus. He tells them and us to be renewed in the spirit of your mind, to put on the new self created in God's righteousness and holiness of truth. The interior renewal of our minds will be shown in our literally dressing ourselves as new men and women. That's the word enduite that we sang means, based on the Greek endustai, created by God in righteousness, holiness, and truth. St. Paul says today that we have to take off all the old clothing of lying and dissimulation and speak the truth. We have to remove the garments of stealing and vest ourselves with hard, honest labor with our own hands. To be righteously indignant, but not let that anger convert to sin. In short, to leave no room whatsoever for the devil, who seeks to wrap us in worldliness and life according to the flesh, in anything and everything except in our baptismal garment given to us out of love by the Lord. To be a faithful Christian is to live as a new man or woman, renewed in mind in such a way that we will live as a new creation in genuine holiness of life. As we are on the vigil of the beginning of October, the month of the Holy Rosary, we look to Our Lady as the one who shows us how to respond to God's invitation with a pure heart, with a pure soul, with all her mind and all her strength. Yesterday, Pope Francis made an appeal for Catholics throughout the world that throughout the month of October, in response to the filth that's in the Church and filth that's in the world that has invaded the Church, he's asking us to pray three prayers every day throughout October. He's asking us to pray the Rosary each day. October is the month of the Holy Rosary, which Mary wants us to enter into her school and contemplate her Son and her Son's purity and His mercy. Second, the prayer of the Subtuum Refugimus, which is the oldest recorded Marian prayer we have besides the Hail Mary in the Gospel. We fly to Thy protection, O Holy Mother of God. Despise not our petitions and our necessities, but deliver us from all dangers, O glorious and ever blessed Virgin. And then he asked us, as we'll pray at the end of this homily today, the prayer of St. Michael, to defend us from the evil one and all his wiles, because he wants us not to take the clothing of our soul seriously. He tries constantly to deceive us that we're just fine, exactly as we are, and we don't need the detergent of Christ's blood. As we today come forward to this wedding feast, we thank the Lord for the gift of His extraordinary invitation. We ask Him for the grace fully to cooperate with the way He wants us to celebrate, vested in clothes ever more fitting for the occasion, radiant like His mother and the saints, with His justice, His holiness, His truth, with detachment from every taint of sin and from worldliness, and strengthened by this celebration to go out and invite others to the same feast and help them get properly clothed. This way, that only here on earth, but forever at the eternal wedding feast, we might rejoice together. The feast is ready. This is the good news. And we've come. How blessed are those called to the wedding feast of the Lamb. Praise be Jesus Christ. Let us ask St. Michael's help to defend us from evil and help make us strong in stomping on the head of the evil one. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us.